The idea of doing three internships in one summer is wild and exhausting, and yet this is exactly what Elizabeth Davis did. Why? Because she was truly on a career discernment journey. In this episode, you'll hear how Elizabeth went from PLS major to female venture capitalist, and how pit stops in between at sustainable cattle ranches and Coca-Cola helped her gain clarity on who she was, what she cared about, and how she could have an impact on the lives of others. Enjoy the episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of You're Probably Okay. I am so excited to host today's guest, Elizabeth Davis, Principal of Female Innovators Lab at Anthemis. Elizabeth is a young ND alum, a PLS major, and an absolute trailblazer among her peers in the world of venture capital. Elizabeth, thank you so much for sitting down with Lucy and me today, and it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolutely. I was thinking a lot about, Lucy and I have been excited to interview you, and I was thinking about if this podcast was a movie, it would start with a scene of you sitting next to Indra Nooyi, taking a crowd of people captive with your thoughts and your world-changing ideas, and then it would kind of fade to black, and on a screen it would say 10 years earlier, and we would see you sitting in the South Dining Hall noticing your friend reading the Iliad. Can you talk a little bit about what that scene meant and why that would be what we cut to?
Yeah, of course. So when I was a sophomore at Notre Dame, I was a poli-sci major, and I, at that time, had this goal of looking around, how do you cure malnutrition, third world malnutrition? It's a very lofty goal of what that actually looks like. And I was in the South Dining Hall, and a good friend of mine was reading the Iliad. And she said, I'm reading this for class. And I said, this is one of my favorite books. How do you actually read this for class? And she said, I'm a PLS major. And I said, what's a PLS major? And she started telling me, and I'm like, I want to be a PLS major. This sounds pretty incredible. So I went to my advisor at the time, and I looked at how do I actually pivot to PLS from poli-sci. And it was something where at that point I was, I think, in my first semester sophomore year. So then I had to double SEM for multiple semesters, which was a lot for a PLS student, but was completely worth it. And honestly, I think so many ways being a PLS major helped me in every aspect of my career now and getting onto the stage with then the former CEO of Pepsi, Indra.
Talk a little bit about that, though, because you and I, this is kind of why obviously you're on this podcast, because you love liberal arts. Talk a little bit about how that PLS, what you got from that, what that taught you, how that's helping you a little bit today.
Of course. So when I was a PLS major, I think, and everyone who's a PLS major can, I think, empathize with this, is you have to read so much during those seminars on top of every other class that you have. And I remember one summer they said to get ahead by reading War and Peace. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh, like getting through this novel was just the bane of my existence during the summer. And the first 300 pages, I'm like, oh, not another page. And then you keep reading and you're like, oh my God, this is actually really good. And then you are getting excited about it and whatnot. But I think one of the most amazing things about being an arts and letters major and then PLS specifically are probably three different things. One is you develop such critical thinking really early on through those Socratic seminars that you have. I think the second is it's very much focused on curiosity. So you're constantly really curious about the world, about the evolution of human thought. And then there's this time pressure of the importance of execution. So you actually have to get through all these texts in order to be able to talk about them during classes. So I think those three elements of critical thinking, curiosity, and execution really set you up for any job that you want to do during and then post Notre Dame.
So, Elizabeth, the mental jump that's often really hard for our students to make is how they reconcile studying with what they love and finding a career. So how did these two align for you? And what would you say to students facing pressure to just get a job?
Oh, my gosh. So much pressure to get a job.
Yeah.
So when I was at Notre Dame, and ever since I was a kid, my dad had this quote, to find your passion and do it in the service of others. And so for me, that was very much impact driven throughout my career of how do I have the biggest possible impact that I can have in the world. But I think when you come to Notre Dame, there's a lot of pressure on you as a student, where there are these routes of consulting and investment banking, at least when I was here, that are very laid out paths for you to get a great job, for you to understand what that recruiting path looks like, for you to have a great salary after school. But for me, I knew that's not what I wanted to do at all. And it was something where definitely at times I felt a lot of pressure to do that. But what I think Notre Dame allows you to do is to explore different areas that you're excited about. So during Notre Dame, I did everything from working on a cattle ranch in Montana to working for a nonprofit called the Marine Stewardship Council to working for the U.S. Senate to then working for Pepsi on their sustainability team. And what a Notre Dame education allows you to do is to go in all these different paths and see what you're most excited about and where you really want to make the biggest impact in the world. And it doesn't have to be consulting or investment banking. I was just having coffee with a Notre Dame student who's a junior, and she said students feel so much pressure that they need to go down these paths. But I think what's exciting is there are so many more paths that you can go down, and especially with an arts and letters degree, is it allows you to go and explore, even like Corey, right? Where it's like, okay, if you want to figure out to be a producer, that there are so many jobs that you can do with even an FTT major. So I think that the options are honestly endless.
That's awesome. Can you tell us a bit about how you navigated the internship process and how you leveraged your Notre Dame network and how it all culminated in your favorite failure?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Favorite failure. So good. So my goal, and I think for all Notre Dame students, my goal should be for an internship, is to try a ton of different things and see what you're excited about. So, I mean, like I mentioned, I did so many different internships. My sophomore year, I did two internships where I worked on the cattle ranch. I also worked for a lead green consulting firm, and I hated that consulting firm I loved the woman I worked for, but I thought it was the most boring job. I much preferred working on a cattle ranch, which, do I want to run a cattle ranch? No. But did I love it? Like, absolutely. So I think for me, what I realized during my internships is to use them as almost a litmus test to understand what you want to do after school. And I think that's the best thing that you can do during your summers at Notre Dame, is try a ton of different things. And I remember going to career services, and I said, you know, during my junior summer, I want to work for the U.S. Senate. I want to work at Pepsi. I want to work at the Marine Stewardship Council. And they sort of were like, yo, good luck. Like, I mean, I don't know how this is going to happen. And so I finagled it, honestly, together, in part using my senior thesis to be able to figure out what that could look like. But I think using your summers to see what you get most excited is the best use of your time, or even during school. But when I think about my favorite failure, and I love that way to think about failure, because I think there have been so many failures throughout my life and even my career so far. But one of those was after Notre Dame. I really, after my summers that I did all these internships, I realized that I really wanted to work at a multinational corporation focused on global sustainability. And in my mind, my two dreams were either Unilever or Coca-Cola. And amazingly, the chief information officer at Coca-Cola was a Notre Dame grad. And so I got connected to him. We really hit it off. His daughter is actually the one that I was having coffee with this morning, who's now a junior at Notre Dame. So full circle of how things happen. But so he put me in touch with the chief sustainability officer's office at Coca-Cola. And miraculously, the chief of staff was a Notre Dame grad. So there were all these Notre Dame grads that I didn't even realize existed at Coca-Cola. And I was able to secure an internship after school. But for me, and for so many Notre Dame students, the idea of having an internship after school, where so many of my friends had full-time jobs with investment banking, consulting, sales and trading, lawyers, sort of trying to figure out all these different paths, the idea of taking an internship that I'd be making $30,000 a year, so barely able to pay rent and food, was very much, in my mind at the moment, such a failure. But if I think about that opportunity and what it allowed me to do is it then allowed me these opportunities at Coca-Cola that I would have never had. After my internship, I was fortunate that I got a full-time job offer from Coke, and I saw the world. I spent time in India, China, Turkey, focused on global sustainability, that if I hadn't taken that internship and had that quote-unquote failure in my mind, then I would have never had the opportunities that I've had since.
Do you come back for reunion? Did you come back the first one?
No, I didn't.
You didn't, but you come back for tailgates.
I come back for tailgates, right? Oh my gosh, all the time.
How would you compare, because y'all come back with your class, you talk about what you're up to. How would you compare your happiness level compared to some of the friends who took more traditional
paths? Oh my gosh. So my husband, also Notre Dame grad, and I talk about this all the time, because he was Mendoza, finance, sales and trading, Goldman right after school. So he knew his path. To a T. Mm-hmm. Mine was like intern, Coca-Cola, cattle ranch, like what is happening? And we talked about this so much because I had all these conversations where I'm like, is my path crazy? Is this so dumb to go down this route? But my happiness compared to so many of my classmates after school was totally different. A lot of my friends were working 75, 80, 90 hour weeks as investment bankers and absolutely hating their life and doing that for a year or 2 years and then being like, I don't actually know what I want to do with my life. I don't like investment banking. Like, I'm not sure if consulting is for me. So what do I do? Whereas for me, I spent that time where I was loving what I was doing. I got to see what it was like to work at this multinational corporation. I got to work with women entrepreneurs in India. And so for me, it was something where almost questioning early on what I wanted to do and finding impact and meaning in my work then led me sort of similar to Issa, right? Of something that you're really passionate about, excited about, and I'm still doing to some extent that from, I mean, what I started out after undergrad.
Was that important? Did you need to see years later that you made the right call, or were you just at peace with it no matter if all of them would have came back and said, I love investment banking? Or was that just kind of a great moment for you to say?
Hey, oh my God, honestly, I told you so. Such a great moment. Yeah. And the same thing happened when I went to business school, because it's almost like the clock is reset and it's everyone is like becomes robotic again and is like investment banking, consulting, must do. And I'm like, this is insane. And then I got into venture, which was also a path that people were like, oh, like, what is this path to venture? And so it was sort of that mentality again, but it's easy to get wrapped up almost in that rat race of feeling like you should be doing something because your other classmates are. But unless it's something where you're like, I am super excited about consulting or I'm super excited about investment banking. And I feel like I'm like nagging on these two careers, but I just feel like they were the most prevalent when I was here. Mm-hmm. But if you're excited about them, then like, great. You know what I mean? Like that's, I think, a totally different story. But find something, and that's what a liberal arts education allows you to do, is explore, see what gets you excited. Even Jared, for your role too, I mean, if you think about 10 years ago that you'd ever be in the seat that you're doing now.
Yeah. There's no, it's wild that they're letting a Purdue grad help Notre Dame students figure out what they're supposed to do. But I'll take it. Let's talk about the venture thing. So big question, how can I make the biggest impact on people? That was a question that I know you kept coming back to professionally. And I often tell students that finding career happiness is discovering what you're passionate about and aligning it with the unmet need of the world. And I feel like you did exactly that. In order to break into venture capital, you had to sell firms on YU. And I love that story. And I gotta say, it's one of the most creative approaches I've ever heard. So even when I was doing the Palo Alto Silicon Valley startup thing, I hadn't seen that degree of creativity. I thought that was really cool. Walk us through your rise into venture capital and tell us especially why it's so important to you that you're doing what you're doing now.
Absolutely. So when I was at Coca-Cola, I was working with these women entrepreneurs. I was loving the work that I was doing, but I didn't love Atlanta. And I think that's something to think about as anyone who's listening of where do you want to land? Do you have a specific company that you want to work for, or do you have a specific city that you want to land in? And so I left to take a very risky job of starting a company and building impact programs for Fortune 500s. And as I was building this company, I loved the work I was doing, but that really ultimately led me to be recruited to join this advertising agency focused on women entrepreneurs. And the reason that I give this context is when I was working with these female founders, I realized that so many of them really struggled to get VC funding. And I was like, where is this disconnect? There's something wrong with the system. And then realized that only 2.9% of all venture capital funding goes to women founders. So absolutely abysmal rates of funding that goes to women. And if you think about that, last year in 2021, $600 billion went to founders in the venture capital ecosystem. So this huge quantum of capital, and women founders only received 2.9% of that.
That's
so
crazy.
Like, literally insane when you think about some of those numbers.
I heard that around 40% of entrepreneurs are women as well. And so it's crazy that only 2.9% of them get funding.
Totally. So there's this huge opportunity. So I went back to business school, was really thinking that I either wanted to stay in an impact job at like a Nike, which I've always loved Nike as a brand, or go into venture. And I remember telling my dean this, and I said, you know, I want to go one of these two routes. And our dean said, you know, very different routes, venture and impact. What could this actually look like? So my second year at business school, I said, you know, I want to go like full in. This is what I want to do. And my background is very untraditional to venture. I'm not like my husband, where I didn't work at Goldman. I didn't work in the specific, I wasn't a finance major. I wasn't all of these things that I felt like you needed to be, or I didn't do investment banking. But so what I did is, one of the things when you're a venture capitalist, you get to hear all these pitches from founders. So you get to hear their story of like, why them? What are they creating? What does the market look like? What is their product? All these different things. So I sat back and I said, what if I created a pitch deck on myself? So basically what these VCs already see, and create something that shows them why me, why they should hire me, what does my network look like, what is the competitive analysis, so if I'm comparing myself to another individual, why would it be interesting to quote-unquote bet on me? And the great thing about this pitch deck is I customize it a bit for every fund I applied, but I honestly got every first interview because of this deck. So out of the four firms I applied for, I got all interviews at these really top VC firms, which I think was a bit unheard of with my background. And I think it was because it was totally thinking outside of the box of something that really got their attention.
So when I first heard that story, I remember I asked you, how much of this is you and how, like, Elizabeth Davis and co, and versus how much can this just be learned? Talk a little bit about, was this something that, look, I know the point of the podcast is to incept the idea that liberal arts does great things for everybody all the time, but there's also this degree of kind of the natural talent you had. Do you feel like that creativity, that idea you had to do the why me pitch deck, kind of came from the fact that you've lived a life already of just trying to think more outside the box, be creative?
Oh my gosh. So Notre Dame, and especially PLS and Arts and Letters, prepares you so much for thinking outside the box. And that's the thing where I think the value of an Arts and Letters degree is applicable to whatever career that you decide to go in, whether it's venture capital, whether it's a good friend of mine is a writer on SNL, whether you want to do consulting. There's such different paths that it prepares you for. And so this ability to think critically, that honestly I think came in part from my great book seminars, where you have to defend your perspective. You have to look and think through other people's standpoints and their perspectives, and change the way that you're thinking about things helps you so much in being really creative with your thinking. And that I'm sure really drove me to really think outside the box, to the point where every job since I left Notre Dame, I've really created myself. I've always pitched a job of what I'm excited. When I was at Coke, I pitched this job that I wanted to focus on millennials and impact. And I wanted to travel the world and tell these stories of women entrepreneurs and our water sustainability work. Then I left to start my own company again, pitched out what could that actually look like for a job, and when I was working in advertising. And what I think is so exciting is an Arts and Letters degree allows you to figure out what you're excited about, but then to think outside the box to be like, okay, what could actually be possible for me? And it really allows you to then, as you go along in your career, constantly refine. And there's this great quote by Steve Jobs that he said, you know, you can't really connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect the dots looking back. And I think what that's so true, especially for my career, but an Arts and Letters degree in Notre Dame allows you to be able to have this platform that you can build off of.
So it is possible to study what you love and then go out and do what you want.
Exactly.
That's fantastic.
That's crazy.
It is a wild thought that somebody did it without having to take the traditional path.
So, Elizabeth, this time with you has been so inspiring, and we can't thank you enough. We've reached a segment of our show that we want to ask you three rapid fire questions and get like an off the cuff response. Jared and I have affectionately named the segment The Fast Three with Jared and Lucy.
We can reiterate. We'll call it something else next time, but today is called this.
I love it. I'm here for it.
So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Jared, you go first.
All right, so you had a Why Me pitch deck. Mm-hmm. What are you putting on your Why Liberal Arts pitch deck?
Ooh, I would say three things. Creativity, it allows you the ability to think creative. Second, it allows you to execute. So if you think about, okay, why liberal arts, you can figure out how to actually execute any type of job that you need to. And the third is probably curiosity, that you're constantly curious about the world and the way that the world works and the evolution of human thought.
Do I go now?
Yeah, go for it.
All right.
We can tell this is our 15th episode. We got it down pat.
Oh, yeah. I'm so ready. I love it.
So you've given great advice for students to follow so far, but what advice would you say college students should ignore?
Ooh, ignore. I would say ignore the advice that you should do something. There's so much of this of you should do this certain major, or you should be a part of this certain club, or you should have an amazing GPA. The only time my GPA actually mattered was when I was applying to business school. But other than that, I've never, ever talked about my GPA since school.
Yes.
That's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah.
I say the same thing. Nobody asks you about it. It's no this one. Weird metric that the students guide themselves on.
Totally.
And it's not their fault.
Exactly.
But not that you can have a bad one, but also it's not the end all be all. All right, so the phrase dream job. Mm. What did it mean to you at 18, and what does it mean to you now?
Mm. So when I was 18, my dream job was probably to work in a multinational corporation and be the chief sustainability officer one day. So I wanted to be the CSO at either Coca-Cola, Unilever, Pepsi, one of those places. Now, it would probably be running my own venture capital firm with my husband, Notre Dame grad. What I think I now appreciate so much more than I did when I was 18 is the importance of autonomy and flexibility, where my days are exactly like I make them. I have so much autonomy in the work that I get to do, which is amazing, what I get to focus on, what founders I get to connect with and learn from, what events I want to host and build. So I think autonomy has been something that I didn't appreciate as much when I was 18. And then also the second piece is culture. Joining a culture that you're excited about, that you love the people that you're working with. I don't think that you can underestimate culture of a company, especially as you're thinking about where you want to go in your career.
Absolutely. Autonomy on the full display today.
It's yeah.
9 o'clock in the morning on a weekday.
I'm technically actually working today, yeah, so this is exactly my job right now.
All right, so second question from me. What book do you give the most as a gift?
Oh my gosh. So recently I've been giving The Alchemist, which I always read as I'm transitioning jobs, and it gives you this moment of reflection around the impact that you want to have, what matters in life, a lot of perspective. So I give that book, and I've given it recently for a couple of friends.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So how many times have you had to read that?
It's really
short. I love
that
he's like, every time I transition jobs.
I know. I'm like, well, actually, so I have transitioned jobs a lot, actually. Yeah. I'm like, let me count these. I'm not going to count my internships, but Coke, On Purpose, Warn, Nike, The Helm, and Anthemist. So I've read it 7 times.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. And you probably still don't even know what you want to be when you grow up.
I know, exactly. Yeah. I'm still figuring it out.
So I think what's fascinating about you is you are a, not an outlier necessarily, but a small group in a large VC. There's not a lot of people doing what you're doing. Mm. What are some of the bad recommendations people get in your profession? Mm. Some of the bad advice the professionals give you.
So for VC, a part of the reason too I got into VC is there's only around 14% of VC investors are women. And so there aren't that many women investors, which is why I also wanted to be a check writer and driving more capital to female founders. One of the pieces of advice that is often given for VC, which I mean, grain of salt, is to just get your foot in the door at any VC firm. And I did the exact opposite, where I basically said, here are the criteria that I want out of a fund, and I'm going to look at that fund. So my criteria for VC were things like, I knew I wanted to be in New York. I knew I wanted to be investing in early stage. I wanted to be investing in Europe and the US, and I wanted a mandate to invest in female founders or underrepresented founders. I think a lot of people just say, you know, get in the door and you'll get experience in VC and then you can take it wherever. But the issue with that is you might absolutely hate the fund that you're at. And a lot of people don't leave their fund. So they'll stay there for years and years and years. So I think over-optimize on the culture of the fund and what you're excited about, and like under-optimize just like getting your foot in the door at any VC fund, which I think is a little bit of contrarian advice.
Yeah, especially when you're trying to break into a hard industry to break into.
Mm-hmm.
To be that picky, and I mean that in a good way,
I know,
is awesome. Kudos.
Thank you.
For what it's worth.
Thank you.
Definitely. And you've clearly done your research on all the firms that you've interviewed for or applied to, which is really amazing.
Thank you.
So what are you scared of the most right now professionally?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so this is going to be very much of me in my early 30s, when this is something that you get to look forward to, is having a kid. Because for me, I am so career driven. I love my career. My career is a huge identity for me. That the idea of being out of the workforce for 3 months plus managing a kid after is very overwhelming.
Managing
to me.
A kid.
I know, oh my God. It sounds like a word. Kara's like now like a new father too. So it's probably like, what's happening?
That's so funny.
It's super easy. You'll be fine.
Fine. But yeah, that's definitely something that I'm a little bit terrified for.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I thank you for the time.
Yeah. So, Elizabeth, we just want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today and sharing your story. I speak for all my fellow students and everyone else in this room where your story is just so motivating, and we're so fortunate to have you as part of the Notre Dame Alumni Network. Personally, I want to work for you. I want to just be you. You're just so inspiring. We'd love to hear more about what you're doing right now. So what are you working on, and how can we help you achieve your goals?
Lucy, come work for Female Innovators Lab.
I will. No,
I will
stop.
Literally,
I will.
You as an intern.
Really?
I'm like, yes, let's talk about
It's on recording.
I know,
so like you
like,
have to.
I love it. So I work at an early stage investment firm called Anthemis. And we're a $1.5 billion fund. I personally get to invest in female founders, co-founded teams in fintech. So everything from payments to retail banking to data tech and infrastructure. But the amazing thing is my job is basically meeting with founders, hearing their idea, and then ultimately investing $500,000 to $1 million in these early stage ideas, and then working with the founders. And so my husband and I actually are in a very similar seat, and we always talk about how we have literally the best jobs in the world.
That's amazing, because earlier you said you wanted to do two different paths after having an MBA, either venture or impact. And so this is a great way, like a great intersection. And I think it's so cool that like your Notre Dame experience has helped you like find your passion
totally.
And be like confident that you can make that intersection work.
Definitely. I know. I think about it honestly all the time of how do you actually combine those different intersections in life of what you're excited. And so I feel so fortunate. It's funny because different recruiters have reached out and said, you know, we'd love to have you come over as leading a fintech part of our fund. And then my question is always, can I have a mandate that's just focused on female founders and underrepresented founders? And when they say no, then I say I'm not interested.
Mm-hmm.
So
making the college proud, Elizabeth. Thank you.
You really are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This is so much fun. I'm like, I just want to hang out with the four of you all the time. I love the Beyond the Dome. Huge shout out to Jared, Lucy, Corey, and Issa. I mean, it's such an incredible program. I feel so fortunate to have been a part of it, and can't wait to hear so many other episodes and other alums.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Great day, everybody. It's possible to go from PLS to venture capital. You've heard it here. Thanks for listening.